is the source of some of the great heartaches and the great joys of our teens. You probably know from your own personal experience at home that if your daughter is happy and content in her friendships, she's on the pig's back. And if she isn't, nothing can console her. And obviously, they're all variations on the theme there, depending on the temperament of your daughter. And for us adults, for you parents, I know from listening to you, this can be a little bit exhausting. You can feel like a little bit like as if you're on a roller coaster and you're never sure when it's going to end or how it's going to end and if there's going to be wreckage in the process. So what I would normally do when I was giving this to teenagers, I'd always say to them, well, I'd always see the question across their eyes, what's in it for me, miss? So I'll do the same with you parents and say, well, what's in it for you as parents? Well, as the topic of the talk says, it's building for the future. And what you're trying to do really is you're helping your daughter to negotiate relationships. And those relationships will be relationships in university if she chooses to go to university. They'll be the relationships in her workplace. It could be hopefully her future spouse. You're helping her to know how to make friends, to keep friends, and to choose good friends. You're helping her to grow into that confident young woman and to have lasting friendships in her adulthood. The girls often joke, when I would often say to them before, you know, what would you look for in a boyfriend? And they kind of, well, this, that, and the other. And I'd say, well, you're looking for generosity, you're looking for loyalty, you're looking for sincerity, you're looking for a good sense of humour. Well, a future spouse is going to be your soulmate, and that's what the basis of a good friendship is. It's basically that. I think also helpful to think in terms of a dance. Okay, now this might sound a little strange, but friendships aren't tidy processes. In fact, there's nothing tidy about being a teenager, and there's nothing scientific about it, except for the fact that, unfortunately for them, their frontal cortex doesn't fully develop until they're 21, which means emotionally they can be a little bit of a train wreck sometimes, and they don't have a sense of perspective. That's not their fault. It's just the way the human develops. But the reason I chose the image of a dance is because with a dance, two people have to negotiate certain steps. Somebody stands on somebody's toes, somebody goes in the wrong direction, somebody goes too far in one direction, somebody goes too far in another direction, it falls apart, they get it back together again, and it's practice makes perfect. And that's what many friendships look like. In fact, the best kind of friendships look like. I was talking to a past pupil recently, and she's best friends with her school friend from Rosemont, and she was telling me, the two of them laugh about it now, but I remember, because they were a year behind me in school, and the traumas of that friendship, you know, because one was very, very loyal and wanted absolute loyalty, which is a beautiful quality, and the other was a little bit more fuzzy on the area of loyalty, shall we say. And there was a lot of ins and outs and ups and downs and suffering in the process, but you couldn't separate the two of them, even though they live in different countries. And it's one of the deepest friendships I've ever seen as adults. But it all began with a lot of teenage angst, and backwards and forwards. So I think when we're thinking about friendship of our teens, there's what I'd call the private victory or growth. And then there's the public victory or growth. In other words, we're looking for our teens to grow, and we're also looking for their friends to grow. You'll often overhear the phrase when they come home from school, sometimes they might say, well, she said this, and then I said that, and then she said this, and then I said that. And what we're trying to help our teens to do is to step into a different space, which is to see the vision of that friendship. You know, is to think, well, okay, she said that, and maybe she had a headache, or maybe she had a bad hair day, and we can end up feeling like as if we're putting out fires. But what we're really trying to help them to do is to realize, well, where do you want this friendship to go, and how can we get there, and do you have the qualities that you want in your friend? And that's always a hard one, you know, for even us as adults, you know, because those are the qualities that you need to, you can't control your friend and how she operates, but you can certainly exhibit the qualities you hope her to reciprocate with. And they will inspire her potentially to step into that space. So we're trying to help them to, you might say, develop those leadership qualities, those virtues, those good habits, which again grow into the women we hope they'll be. It's about self-awareness for our teens to know, well, okay, this is what you think you said, but how would that come across? You know, for example, you're an extrovert, she's an introvert. Do you think she might have felt a little bit taken aback by that comment? Or also helping them to learn that not everybody ticks the same way as she does. And that's it's incredible, but that's such a big eye-opener for them. And it is a two-way street. There is mutual growth here. And insofar as it's one-sided a friendship, it'll never work. And we can probably write a book on it ourselves. There are tons of variables when we're dealing with teens. There are temperaments, you know, what kind of teen you have. Is she an introvert? Is she an extrovert? And there's no one-size-fits-all. So even as we're talking about friendship this evening, you know, it's really, really important that you take this discussion, as it were, and think, well, with my other half or with whoever at home, how would this best fit our situation, our team? Because it's also worth bearing in mind that as adults, we tend to think that teenage friendships are fleeting and even insignificant, you know, but they're not. And certainly with teenage girls, close friends are a huge support for them. And I have to say, I've been very impressed by some of the maturity that I've seen in our girls, you know, especially when there are challenges. You know, the one friend's going through a tough time or something, and they've been there for each other. And I think that's really lovely. But as I said, our teens lack perspective, and we're going to have a look at that. Why do they lack perspective? Well, the first thing is, I suppose, and because they lack perspective, you know, it's just before we go into that, I think it's worth bearing in mind that how they see friendships is something that's powerful, it's new. Their friendships in secondary school are the first close relationships they have outside their home, really. And particularly in secondary school, because they're stepping into the space of young adults. And so they're going to experience feelings of acceptance, feelings of love, in the best sense of the word, judgment, rejection, that come from that type of friendship for the first time. As they make close friends, their emotional world, you know, rapidly expands into shared secrets and thoughts and feelings. And it can be thrilling and it can be terrifying at the same time. And it's just worth bearing in mind all of those feelings. As I said, their frontal cortex isn't developed. So that means that part of the brain which gives them perspective or a certain amount of rationale about their decisions. They tend to be flooded by their emotions. Some teenagers more than others, depending on their temperament. So we can't expect them to be reasonable at times, you know. What it can come across sometimes, you know, sometimes what you can experience with the girls is they come across as very articulate. You know, I don't know if you found yourself reflecting what you were like when you were a teenager their age, and you thought, God, I wouldn't have been able to express that at all. Or even the photos, you know, you look at yourself. There's a complete lack of self-awareness, of self-consciousness. You're almost mortified. Think, how would I let that photo be taken? Because there weren't so many swipes and filters and goodness knows what. So in a sense, they are in a different world. But they do come across as maybe much more together than maybe you or I did. But at the same time, as adults, we have to be the perspective builders, because that sort of articulateness can come across when they feel flooded by their emotions, and it unravels very quickly. And we can be very surprised and often taken aback by that. And so we need to sort of help them to zoom out the lens, you know, sometimes with open-ended questions like, you know, have you considered X or Y, or do you think she meant this instead of that, or whatever it is, because we can never tell our teens what to think of. Especially, or who to choose in terms of their friends. We can only sort of encourage them along and listen and be gentle in our approach. They want things, they want to fix things, and they want things to be better. And of course, it comes from the simple fact that I suppose they feel very responsible, and why can't it happen now? And of course, the fact is that nothing happens at the pace we'd like it to happen, and least of all, building friendships. There is a space they're not responsible for, and that's they need to discover and create boundaries in friendship. And that's something that we really need to help them with time and time again. It's not something they understand straight off. Some of these things can lead to a lot of anxiety in their teens, you know, problems with their friends, what they see as insurmountable, things they're trying to control that they can't. And I suppose it's important for us as adults to help them to get to the root of that, you know, that, and to help them to identify there are things they can't control or fix. And a lot of life's happiness and peace comes from that simple acceptance. But they have to experience that to understand it and to learn. Girls are emotionally very complex. They always look for connection. You might be, you know, it's different. If you ever overhear teenage boy conversations or have it at home, and girls, the lads will talk about the football, the soccer, you know, did you see so and so? It's all about doing, you know, sport. Whereas the girls, it's, I like your hair, I like your selfie, you know, will you come to lunch with me? What, you know, sharing, you know, little things of it's a radically different experience. So they are often confused by their feelings. They gravitate towards other teens who can help them to understand their feelings. And they go through physical and emotional changes, which they look for friends in, because they want somebody else. They want to feel they're not alone. And finding a couple of very close friends is such a support in all of that, because they realize they're not alone. There are other girls who feel exactly the same way I do. And it's an important part of them discovering their self-worth, their self-esteem, and helping them to navigate, you might say, the slightly painful or less painful experiences of life. And you'll all have experienced that in many, many different ways. And that's why, just to mention here, the virtues that the teachers and staff in Rosemont encourage the girls with a lot would be ones like loyalty. You know, it's that thing. I heard a lovely story recently from a parent who described, it's not a parent of the school, who just described how she was just impressed by her daughter. She said there was an event where they were performing, and these were students in her class who didn't know they played instruments. So they brought them in, and her friend played the violin pretty badly by the sounds of it, or was a beginner. And she noticed somebody else in the class laughed. And so at the end of the performance, she went over and said, "Do you play the violin?" And this other classmate said, "No, I don't." And she said, "Well, I think it's a pity you laughed, because it's a very difficult instrument to play. And I'm proud of my friend for playing it. So not so nicely." Anyway, she took this person to task a little bit. But I thought, wow, that's quite impressive. And it is impressive when you see and you hear the girls standing up for each other. And it's something we need to encourage them with a lot. Is that lovely quality of loyalty. I'm with you in this, you know. So anyway, to move on, I suppose, the importance of friends for our teens is that friends help them to understand themselves. Now, a friend is somebody who helps me to feel I'm not alone, but also they get a sense of I'm a shared experience, that I'm not alone in this. This is part of the human experience, so many of the things that I go through in my day and the challenges I have. It's important that as adults we encourage them with their close friends, that they would have a group of close friends. Now, as we know, they sometimes give the impression of being quite fickle in their friendships, because in first year it's so-and-so, and then you don't hear her name anymore. And then in the beginning of second term of first year, there's somebody else. And it just seems like a moving shadow. That's them just trying to discover themselves and discover what friendships are, because they tend to, initially, it's the groups, you know, they tend to, and there's always a group of friends, and that's good. But it is important that they, little by little, develop. I don't mean exclusive friends, because that can lead to emotional dependencies, which aren't healthy and helpful. But because if that doesn't work, then they're left feeling devastated. But it's a couple of close friends is really, really good and important. So the first thing, I suppose, is you often notice that how they, you know, I often hear dad saying, you know, God, they dress the same, they look the same, and how they often adopt the same mannerisms of their friends. And you can see how friends, you know, shape each other and influence each other. But it does help them to define their identities apart from their families, close friends. And that's why good friends are so important. And I suppose just even studies that have been done on this in UCLA in the States, they did this very, very big study on teens. And they followed them up into their early, mid-20s. And one of the very clear, you know, I think you might say points that came from this study was the fact that the more the girls that they studied into adulthood had a close group of close friends, the greater their self-worth, the greater their ability to navigate, you know, challenges. And the more that they were able to step into that space of managing their own social and adult relationships in life. As opposed to the girls who would have frequently just stuck to the group and had very few, if any, close relationships. And I think that's interesting because sometimes it is important that we're encouraging our girls to develop their social skills, and it's important that they have a group of friends, as opposed to one or two. But at the same time, it's important that we distinguish those friendship from popularity, because popularity can lead to a huge amount of stress in our teens. And if they're in a group and they're looking for their self-worth or their self-esteem just from the group, they won't get it, because the group necessarily changes its dynamic. And it always depends on the strongest personality or personalities. And your daughter may not be one of them. So there is this sense of missing out, this constant sort of, you know, tension of I'm in today, I'm out tomorrow kind of thing. So it's important as adults that, you know, popularity and being accepted are not the gold standard. And it's quite the opposite, in fact. They need to learn how to step away from popularity at times and go, no, I disagree, or no, I want to defend that friend of mine, or I won't be available for that. And that's particularly important for the girls who are more compliant, because they need to learn to establish their boundaries of saying no to certain things, no to responsibilities that aren't theirs to take. And that's, I think it's very important for us as adults, I suppose, to help them with that. Again, I suppose, the other point I suppose to raise here is if friendships, obviously close friendships, help them in their happiness, that's very obvious. And these studies go on, and they sound very obvious, but the truth is, when you look with these big studies done in UCLA, have followed these students, these teens, right through to adulthood, that's what they've consistently found. That these girls were a lot stronger as individuals, but they would have compared close friendships they would have contrasted, let's put it this way. If girls didn't have close friendships, they said it was as damaging to them as smoking and as obesity in their adult life in terms of their happiness. And I thought that was, you know, an interesting point, is that that's how important it is to help our teens with their friendships. So I suppose the next thing I suppose to look at really is the thing of different types of friendships. And again, this is something the girls have been looking at in school. It's something we were looking at in the summer, because with the experience of the first few months of lockdown, you know, from March, April and into May, we realised that the girls would need, you know, some of you were saying, commenting to us that, first of all, well, I'm trying to encourage my daughter to get in touch with her friends, but, you know, it's hard in lockdown and she has to have an excuse to ring her friend. You know, some parents said, oh, my daughter says I'm weird because, you know, ring her to see how she is. Mom, we don't do that kind of thing anymore. And so it was challenging for parents to help their daughters to step into that space. So we realized more than ever is we have to give the girls reasons to believe in their friendships, and also to understand how deep friendship goes, that it doesn't depend on your mood or your friend's mood, that it's something that we reach out to our friends, no matter how we feel, and we encourage them to reciprocate that. So we've been looking at the philosophy of friendship, and Kathleen Patience and Father Pat Garvin have been giving this module to the girls. Kathleen has been giving it to the junior classes, and Father Pat Garvin has been giving it to the senior classes. He's actually a philosopher. He lectures in Maynooth on the topic. So we've been very lucky, and the classes have gone very, very well. I think the girls have enjoyed them a lot and asked a lot of questions. But I suppose if you'll forgive me to step into the philosophical space for a moment. Well, Aristotle, the famous Greek philosopher, spoke about three kinds of friendship. And there's the friendship of pleasure, which is, I just love to hang out with you. You know, you're good fun. You know, we have good crack together. You know, we can kick back and enjoy each other's company. Then there's the friendship of what he called utility, which sounds awful. But it's really the whole thing of sort of you scratch my back, I scratch yours, which also sounds awful. But it means, you know, I'm there for you in need. And, you know, I suppose we can compare that to sort of business relationships. But there's also that element to friendship, that it's the being there for each other, whether it suits or whether it doesn't. And then the third kind of friendship is what we call, it's often used as the gold standard of friendship, where you have two people who are looking outwards for a bigger goal, and they help each other grow. And that's the really deep kind of friendship, where they've worked through their demons together and they're there and they call each other out on things. Look, that wasn't the nicest thing to say, or listen, come on, let's try and do this better together. Let's study this. Come on, let's whatever. They're helping each other to grow mutually. Now, I'd have to say that all those three elements are often present in every friendship. And I would suggest, without being a philosopher myself, but say, you know, I think that's a healthy friendship. And it's good for us as adults to try to help the girls to explore those. You know, if a friendship is getting too heavy, you know, well, that's maybe something we need to double click on and help them to put the fun back into it. If it's a case of your daughter stepping into the space of always being there, kind of a dog's body, always chasing people up, well, maybe it's because the friend she has is somebody who's Miss Popular and never needs to make an effort. And that's a conversation that might need to happen between your daughter and her friend of, look, you know, I'm always doing the running here. And I need you to do a bit of running. And I was very struck by that recently. I was actually listening to a podcast, and the podcaster was basically saying that's what he used to do. He was always the one who was always doing the running. And he said it to his friend, and his friend said, oh, well, it's just I presumed. He stopped running. That was what he stopped chasing his friend. And then he said to his friend, by the way, you know, I'm doing all the running here. And he said, well, I just presumed that you were more into the friendship than I was. And it was a complete misconstruction and misunderstanding going on. So often these things happen because there's misunderstandings about the same thing. You know, somebody understands friendship by, you know, sitting back because they've always sat back in the friendship. And somebody else understands the friendship by doing all the chasing. And so it's helping our teens to understand, well, it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And it's not overarching in one or the other. And that's a process, again, of relationship building, you know, all the time, how often we have to do that. I think the beautiful thing in all of this is in their friendships, the girls will find happiness, a certain amount of peace and self-acceptance and compassion, the emotional support that comes from their teens, their teenage friends. But as I said, the length of a friendship and the value of it will really depend on the mutuality, you know, that it's not a dependent friendship. There's a tandem there. And that's why I keep going back to the dance. There needs to be a tandem there. And keep an eye out for that. Is the tandem there in that relationship? Is your daughter doing all the calling, all the texting? Or is she sitting back, you know? Oh, no, she didn't ring me today. Well, did you ring her? She was out of school today. Is she okay? And that's what friends do, you know? And they might get a bit, about it. But that's where, I suppose, as parents, you know, observing those ups and downs is very helpful. There are elements in every friendship that aren't great, and we know those. Probably we could comment on them from our own experience of being a teenager. We probably observe them in our own teens. Some books you'll read, I find tend to sort of call certain friendships particular things. I don't particularly like that approach. I don't like saying the drama queen or the mean girl, because I don't think anybody's defined by a behaviour. We all maybe our less better self is present in a particular occasion, and we begin again. You know, Rosemont is a school. Our Catholic ethos is about second chances, beginning again. And as we know, good habits and virtues take a while to build. So you'll always find, and I think it's helpful to know your daughter as well, that, you know, for a teen who's, and I've talked about this before, who's an extrovert, sometimes her behavior to an introvert will come across as a bit aggressive and, you know, can almost be perceived as bullying, but that's not the intention. And it's the temperament type. She just get on with it, and she won't ask for permission, and she'll drive forward. And that's where it's very interesting in all of this is oftentimes it's encouraging the one who's suffering to be the one to step up a little bit more. And that's wonderful if we can do that with our teens. Like, I have another program going at the moment for young women who are in the first years of their careers. And the first topic that we have for a speaker, for a moderator, is all about finding my voice. And these are women who are working for big tech and accountancy firms who find it hard to find their voice in the boardroom or in the team meeting or simply with colleagues. You know, so whatever work we do with our teens now to help them to find their voice and to express it in a way that means they don't become aggressive or they don't turn into, you know, an ogre of a personality. Well, that's a wonderful thing to do, because women in their 20s and 30s, and we could probably say it almost for ourselves, are having to learn those skills again and again because they're not easy. So I would say there is that in all of this, you know, some of the behaviors I'm going to describe, you know, I was talking to another past pupil recently, and she said, I'm mortified to think of my behavior when I was in school. I was such a brat. You know, and if I met some of the people in my class, I'd be embarrassed. And she said, if I didn't have a good coach, I don't know where I'd be. You know, because I see some of the behaviors in my daughter now and my son. So in a sense, what I'm really trying to say here is that these are just behaviors. So I'm going to use slightly dramatic labels for them because it'll stick. But it's a behavior. It's not a person and it's not an identity. I think we need to be very careful about labeling. The first one is a slightly dramatic personality. It's called the drama queen. Okay, now we, as I said, we can all exhibit this, but it's a relationship you might see with your daughter who, where some the other half in the friendship exaggerates. You know, it's all drama. You know, it's a very dramatic individual, and they have unique experiences that nobody else in this world could possibly have. And you know, guess what happened to me today when I was going home from school, and guess what so and so. You know, it's all drama. And it's for attention, really, or even sympathy. And if they're dramatic, that's, you know, there's no problem with it. But what can happen with another teen if she's of the less dramatic type, she could be potentially so totally sort of emotionally drained by this. And she's her emotions are aroused in sense of sympathy, compassion. And you might hear in the kitchen, Mom, guess what happened so-and-so today? And every day you're hearing, guess what happened so-and-so? And obviously they're... you know, that's an important one there, because if you're at the end of being the parent of the sort of the more dramatic one, well, it's trying to help our teens to go, well, maybe, you know, it's to be a little bit, how was so-and-so today? You know, what happened to everybody else in school as opposed to what happened? It's trying to find out how's the listening going, you know, how is she supporting her friend? So it depends on what end of the spectrum you are, but it's just important to be able to step into either space. The other one is a slightly draining behavior, where somebody's constantly talking about her woes and it's always problems, you know, this is what happened, this guy I fancy, you know, we can all tell stories about this, but whatever it is, and it can be again a bit one-sided and a bit emotionally draining again. And what can happen with the teen on the other side of that is tiredness and feeling guilty, because she's trying to extricate herself a little bit from the friendship, but she can't quite do it because she feels bad, because she can see that her friend feels relieved because she's the good listening ear. And again, that's, you know, worth trying to help our daughter to step, your daughter rather, our teen to step into the space of, well, listen, what's your story? Or to try to turn the conversation outward focused, or to try to spend a little less time hearing about the woes and a little bit more time hearing for somebody else in the friend group or whatever it is. The other one is the friend who needs fixing. And again, this is, we all need fixing at times, so I hate using even the expression, but the behavior that needs fixing. And again here, the harm here is the ever-increasing demands on the relationship. You know, the teen at the receiving end always feels she's fixing something. Oh, today, guess what happened? This friend said this to her and she ran to the bathroom, and, you know, it feels almost like a sitcom, you know. And, you know, and I suppose, and in fairness to the girl who's suffering that experience, it could be because she's genuinely suffering, but for the other teen, she always seems to be fixing. So it can lead to anger and frustration on the part of the other of your team, depending on if she's at that end of it. And it can lead to an unhealthy and quite a dependent relationship there. Then there's the friend who's cool, you know, the cool, bold friend who does everything at least 3 years earlier than every other teen does it, okay? And it's kind of every parent's nightmare, unless, of course, you were that teen one day at school, you know, back in the day. So you'll understand it completely. And again, this is a natural attraction for a teen who's kind of looking for the cool friend, and maybe because she's a little less cool and this will add to her street cred or whatever it is. And she does a bit of crazy things to get attention, and she always seems to be in with the good, you know, the cool crowd, and she always seems to have the label or whatever it is. And there's nothing wrong with that level of excitement. And I think as parents and caring adults, teens need to be experiencing risk in a healthy environment. That's what that tells us. Now, unfortunately, if those relationships are less than healthy, if this cool friend then starts dabbling in, you know, substances or behaviors that are not healthy, that's what we need to keep an eye out for. But I suppose it's the healthy sense. What a lot of the friendships our teens have tells us more of their view of themselves, you know. And I would have to say with teenage girls, they're very idealistic more, and they love to help. And that's a lovely thing. And if your daughter is a helper and a carer and compassionate, which many of them are, we need to help them with their boundaries. And I'll talk about that in a moment, because sometimes they can really overstep those boundaries because they can't fix. They can assist, they can encourage, they can be the gentle ear, they can give some kind advice, but they can't fix. And that's what's important there. But in terms of the risk, just throw out there, it's very important, good to have environments where you know your teenage daughter can socialise. So obviously in COVID times, it's slightly restricted. But even in groups where there's youth clubs or things like that, you know, I know some of them are involved, the Fearless Youth Club or whatever, where the girls from other schools are involved and they do fun stuff together. And it just gives them that ability to let their hair down in a healthy way. And I think that's very, very good. The other kind of behaviour is kind of, the typical thing that happens with very idealistic girls is they idolise. You know, and it's, again, it's not a problem because it shows they're capable of big ideals. None of these things are problematic. But you can happen, you know, she goes, oh, mom, guess what she this? Oh, she's this, you know, she did this. She, you know, she put this up on social media. It was so fantastic. She's really great on the sports field. Oh, my God, she's the belle of the ball in I don't know, the musical. Which, anyway, all these things that I'm referring to obviously are slightly compromised in COVID times. But you know what I mean? It's the girl who kind of, who just goes, wow, everybody's amazing. And I'm so yearning to be there. And that's a lovely quality. But again, that's a relationship that lacks equality. Because for the girl who's maybe the athlete or the debater or whatever it is, the truth is, she knows that this friend only admires her for what she does, not necessarily for who she is. And that's not something that a teenager sits well with long term. And then the girl who's looking on at her knows this could collapse any minute, you know. And at the same time, she feels more inferior as a result. Now, I'm not saying all of these things, the slightly dramatic day in school, the slightly more, oh my God, mom, she's amazing, moments of every relationship or friendship are normal. It's when they become the singular focus of a friendship, that's when it becomes more problematic. And then, of course, the last one is, of course, what we call the mean girls, and we've heard so much about that. And I would have to say, mean girl, you know, is that it's typically the manipulative type behavior which makes everybody miserable, including the girl who's engaged with it. It's important we don't get paranoid about this kind of behaviour because it can be hurt. You know, obviously the behaviour hurts others, but and make them miserable for a time. But good parenting can make a huge impact there. And I suppose there it's important how to help. You know, help our girls to manage their feelings of hurt in those situations. To realize, and we'll talk a little bit what kind of drives that kind of these kind of behaviors, but helping her to reconnect maybe with friends in a different way or different friends, but helping our teens to step into the space of you can drive this, you can, you know, you don't need to, you can turn this around. And that's, as I said, we'll talk a little more about that in a moment. But some teens are born with challenging personalities, you know, maybe we have them in our own family, and others are wounded by it, and that's important to keep a tab on the social dynamics in our teens' friendships. There are ups and downs, normal ups and downs that don't require parental involvement. And I suppose, but then there are other situations where we need to get involved in, you know, obviously instances of bullying or things on social media that are not helpful. And as parents, we need to muscle in there, and that's just that. But obviously they're two very different things. I'm often asked by parents in these sessions, why do teenagers hurt each other? You know, my own father used to say to us, I come from a family of six girls and a boy, and he just found it fascinating that we'd be mean to each other, you know, and it was low level meanness, but it was just, he was the youngest of four and he didn't have siblings at his work. They were all gone by the time he was born. But I've often thought about this because it's a very interesting question. Jealousy is a big thing, you know. Feeling threatened by somebody else's capacity, attractiveness, whatever. It's part of our human condition. And it could be somebody's popularity, it could be somebody's talents, it could be they have what I don't have. And if that gets out of control, well, the knee-jerk reaction can be, for the girl who feels jealous, is to strike at the girl who seems to have it all. And unfortunately, we have social media platforms now, and that's why we're so vigilant and, you know, I suppose conscious of them in Rosemont to encourage your parents to engage and know what's going on there. But think of Snow White and Cinderella. What's that all about? Sibling rivalry, all about jealousies. You know, it goes back as far as Grimm's Tales. Like, there's nothing new in all of this. But those stories teach us a thing or two, you know. And what we need to do as adults, I think, is help. This sounds bizarre what I'm going to say, but help our teenagers to empathize with the emotion which has led to the bad behavior for a moment. because it does give, it stops what I call the polarization. She's a bad person and I need to avoid her. Okay, I'm not saying there aren't certain toxic relationships that need to be avoided, but there's some that aren't toxic, but can just become a source of avoidance, which isn't really helpful for our teens, because it means it creates a fear of conflict. And that's becoming more of a challenge for us with this generation. It's helping teens to step into the natural, healthy space of normal conflicts and be able to navigate them and to, essentially. So I would just say here is, how do we help our teens with this situation? It's helping them to empathize with the reasons why another teen or friend may behave like somebody who's jealous. And think, did you ever feel jealous before? You know, of course, maybe you felt jealous of so-and-so, maybe you felt jealous of a sibling, maybe you felt jealous, Mom, why did he get that and why didn't I get that? Whatever it is, we hear that a lot. And once they tap into their feelings, they would say, well, look, with so-and-so, she's feeling that jealousy to the level of 10. Okay? And then she'll maybe get the fact that maybe vilifying that person right now isn't the way to go. Not every story in our teenager's life is like a Dickens novel where you have pathological characters. You know what I mean? The really bad and the really good. There's the light and there's the shadow. And there's, you know, where we fail to basically be our better selves. And we need to learn to say sorry, begin again, and tidy up the mess we've made. And that's all part of it. And I think that's important. But jealousy does make even good people do cruel things. And girls can be quite cruel. And that's something that, you know, we know. And insecurity is another reason, you know, why sometimes these bad behaviors appear. And I think it's worth us as adults reflecting a little bit on a way that we can sort of facilitate this, but totally not intending to. And we're used to saying to, I know we talk a lot about growth mindset and fixed mindset and Rosemont, but we often say to our girls how good they are all the time, okay? As opposed to, you did a great job, you know, how good they are, okay? And, you know, that's fine. But if we overdo how good you are, we lead them sometimes into a trap of thinking, because they're so wonderful, they should always feel wonderful. And, of course, that's not real. Because every teenager, you know, think back in your own teenage life, goes through a period which can last for years, where she feels inadequate and insecure. And that's not a problem. It's just called growing into an adult, which is painful, and nobody can do it for her. And the more we help her to face that and to grow and to realize, look, it's, you're normal. There's nothing wrong with this. And unfortunately, everybody around them, because of social media, looks perfect, looks beautiful, looks super happy, looks like as if they've loads of friends. They seem like as if they're the only ones having a pity party. And that's the greatest lie of teenage existence today. You know, and we need to help our girls to realize, well, when they have close friends, they realize it's not that way for everybody, because all my close friends are going through similar, if not in different stages, what I'm going through. And I think that's helpful for us, you know, to realize that every other teen is feeling insecure. And instead, you see, if they don't realize that all teens feel insecurity at different stages and at different levels, they'll spend their time comparing all the time. You know, she's prettier than me, she's smarter than me, she's faster than me. And of course, that's part of the human reality or sociological experience. And it helps them to realize, well, it's not what you look like, it's who you are. And that's most important. And anyway, the more they understand that insecurity is a universal trait for teenagers, the better. So what do good friends look like? I would say that they reflect on your own good friends, you know. And I think one of the things is shared interests, you know. That's a great space for good friendships. Shared values, shared beliefs. And when I say shared values and beliefs, I don't mean necessarily the same religion or things like that. I mean core values. And I mean how they treat each other, you know, their loyalty, their generosity, their sincerity, all of that. And that obviously, that nobody's born a saint. So we all have to learn how to be more generous. And what does generosity look like for different people? If you're familiar with that book, The Five Languages of Love, it's an excellent book by Gary Chapman. Everybody's different, you know. Maybe you look at your other half and you think, well, you know, she's all about nice compliments, and she's all about the gifts, or he's all about showing up on time, or he's all about whatever it is. We all experience love and in the sense of friendship love as well in different ways. And our teens are different. So when they might feel very affronted by the fact, she never returned my WhatsApp, Mum. She never swiped me. She never reposted whatever I put up on Instagram. Whereas for the other friend who's clueless and who doesn't hardly know she has a phone, that's clearly irrelevant to her. So it's helping them to understand that everybody's different and not everybody sees the reality as you do. So that's important. That's what I mean by, I suppose, values, and helping them to articulate what they understand by values. Again, what they look for in a good friend, it's good to get them to write it down. What do you look for in a good friend? It could be a family fun thing. Oh, I'd look for this. Would you? Why? Double click on it. Not just when they're having difficulties in a friendship. Because it helps them, because that helps them distinguish between a true friend and a superficial friend. You know, some of them will say, oh, I love someone's good fun and she's great crack mom. And really what they're really saying is superficial. If they don't, and if we don't help them to challenge that, they'll spend their time looking for friendships in the wrong places. And what it'll mean is they'll never be satisfied because those friendships always implode. You know, friendships based on that will not work because they're not equal. They're not mutual. There's no reciprocity. There's no values in the sense of really, I'm here for you. You know, let's call things by their name. Let's be generous, etc. There's none of that. So, and it's helpful because if they do have whatever way your family works, a little charter. Well, is she on the charter? That's horrendous. But you know what I mean? Is that, well, you said that you didn't want a friend like that, and that's what she's doing. At the same time, your daughter could possibly step into the space of calling her friend out on certain things. It's not that they're looking for perfect, because perfect doesn't exist. But you know what I mean? It's helping them to understand why some friendships don't potentially work out, because they never were going to work out from the get-go. And shared interests or hobbies are a great thing, because they give them time together, you know, and shared interests, you know, it's like they say a couple, C.S. Lewis said a couple, their gaze is opposite each other. She's looking into his eyes, he's looking into her eyes, or whatever. They're looking into each other, whereas a friendship is looking outwards, a shared common experience, a shared hobby or whatever. And I think that's very helpful to think, because it takes the focus off, does she like me, is she this? They're both going to the same gym together, or whatever, swimming class together, or they're both on that camogie team, or they're both whatever. And I think that's really helpful, because it helps them have fun together, you know, and just get to know each other by normal chat. Oh, how was your week? What's going down? Or you look tired, or what's going on? Or did you hear this? Or whatever, the normal. So the other thing is to say, desires to save the universe, okay? Desires for something good. Teenagers often have great ideals to save the world. You know, I want to volunteer in Africa. Time and time again, I'm just mesmerized by them, how much they want to save the world, and they're so motivated by it. Now, all it takes is another teen to flame that sort of desire, or whatever the expression is, to light that, or whatever. An example I heard recently was a teen who just about persuaded her parents before COVID that she wanted to go off and take a gap year and volunteer. And by the time she persuaded her parents, the rest of the group had imploded. But she was so determined, she managed to get 10 other girls, friends of friends, committed to going away on a gap year to volunteer. And I thought, that's motivation. Now, I know for some parents, when I say, oh, you know, your daughter's dying to go to Zambia, I can hear almost look at the face of, you know, of a parent going, well, she can hardly get out of her bed in the morning. Wait till we see what happens with that. Great. No, I'm delighted. But it'd be good if she knew where books were, or she'd bring in her gym gear or whatever. And I always think, well, the truth about it is, our team, there's nothing like a motivated team. There's nothing like a motivated team. And unfortunately, sometimes they can spend a lot of time not being motivated. You know, the light bulb's turned off, you know. And I have to say, some teams just don't like certain aspects of school. Because they're the entrepreneurs out there who want to break it all apart, start off, do it their own way, and they don't really want anybody else telling them to do it in the process. And I think that has to be sort of respected, you know. And you don't want to squash that kind of sort of energy and drive. So I would just encourage there is, and also if we don't encourage that, what happens is we're almost inadvertently encouraging them to spend time on their phone and their tech. And what happens with that is teens are naturally self-absorbed. They've discovered a space of their own personal intimacy, which didn't exist before. And they don't know who they are. They don't know what their emotions are from one day to the next. They don't know what they want to be when they're older. They find it hard to articulate that intimacy, that space. So motivation, or as we would call it, being, you know, at the races, it sometimes can seem a little bit switched off. So when they're motivated about something, it's really good we encourage them, even if it does seem a little bit pie in the sky to us. The chances are it may not be. And I've often commented, you know, with the social projects that we've done with girls in the past people will often say, I'm so grateful for the Rosemont teachers for doing this with us, for the parents, because, and, you know, we went to Mexico, we went to places which, when I look back, and it was crazy stuff, but we did it. And they, you know, I was talking to a mom recently, a mom of four kids, and she said, that made my marriage, she said. I wouldn't have done the crazies that I did in marriage if it hadn't been for that, when I was sort of encouraged to step into a space of risk, healthy risk. Anyway, I suppose parents often say, well, what can we do with all this? You know, I'd say stay close, stay connected, which many of you are, I know for a fact. The relationship you have with your daughter is obviously very different to what she has with her friends. We know very well from previous sort of building leadership talks we've had that hovering or helicoptering won't do it, because if you're sort of muscling in and taking over the driving. What we're trying to do is help them to learn how to drive the car, discover how the clutch works in friendship, discover how to put on the accelerator, take off the foot off the accelerator, to stop, to take a moment to breathe, etc. So that's teaching, and it means taking your hands off the controls until you need to do what the you know, the driving instructor does and take over the controls when it's getting toxic. But more or less, it's learning how to drive, teaching them how to drive in a friendship. I think as well here, it's important for us as caring adults to realise that. I had to laugh during the week. A parent said to me, you know what my daughter said to me? She said, I have a boy who's older, and he's just, you know, he's kind of discovered girls for the first time, and he's an older teen, actually, he must be 17. And she said, my younger daughter said to me, well, you know what you'll do now when Killian goes out on his first date? You'll manage to be in the same restaurant. You go cooey from the table in the distance, and you'll totally destroy it and mortify it, mum, because that's what you do. And she said, it was a real wake up call for me, because I thought that I prized myself in thinking I wasn't a helicopter mom, but I just need to be more careful, you know, whatever. And she had a laugh with her kids about it, but. And mums, this can be a little bit harder. Sorry, mums, to call us females out on this, but it can be harder, you know, to find the balancing act, you know, and to be supportive, but at the same time not to intrude or to come across as needy. It's very good that we're friendly, mums and dads, with the kids, with the friends of your kids. But you're the parent. I'm the caring adult, not the peer. So we don't friend them on Facebook or follow them on Instagram. Because they need to have that space themselves. And that's appropriate distance, you know, it just is. It does increase your authority, actually. And I've seen it time and time again. And I've seen parents do it really, really well. Because you advise her by being the listening ear. Listening fully, which I think is a big challenge for us now, really, isn't it? To put the phone away. To put the kind of, I've got 11 browsers open and our eyes away. To be in the present moment, to read what's not being said, use the car journey, whatever it is, to pick up on the kind of the drop and move, to pick up on the little mannerisms that, you know, I mean, she's under pressure about something, or something she's not telling you, or whatever it is. Because that's inviting her to say more. And the gentle questions help her to figure things out for herself. And that's stepping into the space of becoming more independent, less dependent, but growing into the daughter that you want her to be. The truth is, younger teens will have more fickle friendships, and that's because they're insecure and they're immature. But if they came mature, there's something wrong, and if they came secure, there's something wrong. This is normal, and they can feel terrible when they're rejected. They can blame themselves, and I think it's an opportunity for us as adults to help them to go deeper, you know, to understand what the problem is. Often the problem isn't her, but with good parenting advice, you know, they can get over it, they can move forward. And other times we're encouraging them, look, I think you need to be a better friend there. Maybe you need to listen a bit more. I'm teaching what it means to be kind. You know, kind is when it doesn't suit me to be kind, etc. And to move forward, because they can otherwise get a little self-absorbed and read into things that aren't there. And, you know, to call them out on, did that she actually say that? Did that actually happen? Could there be a reason she said that instead? Or are you just believe that's happening? Because they judge very quickly because they're afraid to get hurt. And that's a normal part of once bitten, twice shy. And that kind of leadership and friendship that your daughters do is contagious, because what they're doing is teaching their friend how to be a good friend. As I spoke recently, I heard a lovely story, a very impressive story of a teenager whose best friend was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And she stuck by her through and through it all. And, you know, I think that's a fearful space for some parents, thinking, oh my God, when this friend is no longer there, will she be able to pick herself up? And this girl went on to college and to become a great college leader. And the depth and the vision that she had of friendship was second to none, because she'd learned through that suffering. You know, now it's to know her own teen, obviously, in all of this. And that's where I wanted to speak a little bit about the thing of boundaries, because boundaries are hugely important. And I think this is something worth bearing in mind. We need to teach our teens boundaries, because they can't fix certain things. Okay, when they find themselves in a space where potentially they don't know how to say no and they're frustrated, they probably overstep their boundary. You know, they're trying to fix something in a relationship that's not for them to fix. Maybe it's for the friend to have a conversation at home about it, or maybe it's to have a frank conversation with that friend. You know, whether she's somebody who always has a problem, is always rushing to the bathroom. And obviously, I have to say here for a moment is that our teens can suffer a lot, and maybe you have a teen at home who is suffering a lot, and anxiety is a source of great worry for parents, and it's on the rise. You know, I read a statistic the other day, 38% up in the last, you know, 2 years, and that's among your teens. So it's a reality there. But what our teens aren't able for is to manage not only their own insecurities but also the anxiety of a teen. You know, they can only support them, encourage them, but they can't be with them every time they go to the bathroom, or they can't be with them because what's happening there is they're stepping into a space that they're not able for, you know, and that's a conversation you need to have with your team. I suppose also taking on responsibilities that aren't theirs to take on, you know, and again, a lot of it does boil down to things like, you know, worried about something and somebody who's having a tough time about a problem, and helping your teens not to reveal, obviously, things that the friend has told her in confidence, but at the same time, helping her to know, again, where the boundaries are. And that's a lot of, for parents, you know, you have a lot of common sense in this area. And I think the danger can be sometimes to want them to step away from the friendship completely. And that isn't sometimes helpful. But helping them to step back from it, you know what I mean? In a way that giving them words to explain. Well, you know, and as I said, if your teen is somebody who's a carer, who's kind, you know, if she's not learning, if all of her friendships are dependent friendships, that's not a good thing. She needs to have friendships where she can kick back, where she can chill out, where she can be herself. And sometimes, you know, we need to help our teens to go, look, you need to change the dynamic there. You know, you need to be the one to, you know, and it's going to cost you a little bit. You can't every lunch break be with that friend. You need to draw another friend. Or you need to explain to your friend, look, whatever it is, you need to explain to her. You need to say, look, I think you need to talk to your mom about that. Or look, whatever it is. But listen, try to change the topic, or not to be on your own for such a length of time with that friend, because you're going to end up being too much of a confidant for her, which doesn't mean she's not confiding in the people she needs to confide in. And that can be parents' frustration when their daughters aren't telling them things that they need to know. So, you know, that's an important part of it. But I think helping them to have boundaries, helping them to have buffers, helping them to realize there's certain things they're not responsible, and that's okay. There are certain things they can't fix, that's okay. There are certain things that they need to find a way to find a language to help their friend with, that's okay. There are certain conversations they need to have about loyalty, and that's okay. Or about sincerity, you know, when somebody's gossiping or saying things, they hear something from somebody else, and somebody in a moment of weakness said something that was hurtful, they need to be able to go back to that friend and say, listen, I heard this, and help them to go back when they're calmer about it, and as you said, help them to feel if they ever felt like, have they ever gossiped before, have they ever said anything behind their friend's back before, and why did they do it, because they were frustrated, because they were angry, or because it was cool, or whatever it was, and say, well, look, maybe this is what your friend is doing. So helping them to go back to that situation and to call their friend out on it. But again, that's why I say it's important to have a group of friends that they can be with, because when one friendship is down, another one's up. And it's a little bit like that, a bit of a tandem. You know, for you economists out there, it's bust and boom a little bit sometimes with the girls' friendships. And I think that's important for us as adults to realise that. But we're trying to help them to grow more and more into the space of long-lasting friendships. And that, as I said at the very beginning, it's definitely a dance, because it is kind of quite painful at times. The book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective Teens, he goes through at the beginning of the book the whole idea of building up good habits and proactiveness in our teens, which can help them to grow in self-awareness and see how they behave, their own behaviours, to get to know themselves more. Because sometimes they very misconstrued ideas of themselves. They're very harsh on themselves potentially. And I think that book helps them to kind of have a bit of fun about going, well, I'm not that bad, but I could work on this. But the other half of the book is very interesting because it's all about the relationships end of things. And it talks about relationship bank accounts. I think that's very helpful when we're talking about friendships with our teens, is how do we help our girls with inputs in their friendships? And as I said, some put too many inputs and somebody too many withdrawals. So where does your teen fit in that? Is she doing the, you know, and it's no harm. Now, we're not doing an audit on it, you know, because that can feel a little bit claustrophobic. But we are getting a sense of, you know, as one mom told me recently, she said, well, she has a new friend and anyway, it's great. No, it's going well, but they were out the other day and I happened to be with earshot and my daughter was all the time like this and I was going, God, this isn't going anywhere. You know, her poor friend hasn't got a word in edgeways. But anyway, she realized she had to step out of her space and then friendship. But she said, that's an interesting one for me to look at with my daughter. She said, because she needs to develop listening skills more there. The relationship, she thinks she's putting loads into the relationship, but maybe the relationship needs to be lifted. The loads she puts in is maybe more listening because her friends are a little quieter. So knowing what investing in a relationship looks like from both sides. The other idea is win-win. And I think there it's again the whole idea of how hurtful things can happen in a friendship is to help them to think, well, just because you see it this way doesn't mean that's the full picture. And helping our teens to step back and go, you know, I suppose to step back a little bit, to do a bit and to freeze frame, if you know that kind of thing, freeze frame for a moment and think, did she actually say that? Could she have said that because she's feeling bad about something? To help them to realize that just because they believe something happened or they've jumped to a conclusion, it doesn't mean it actually happened. Or even better, it doesn't mean that she intended it to happen. And it's helping them not to always jump to conclusions, because that can become a hard thing to undo in adult life, is when people are very quick at making judgments. If they're quick thinkers, they're sharp thinkers, they can make judgments very quickly. And that can cause a lot of pain. So think win-win. You know, you don't want to lose this friendship over one little, you know, bit of bad behavior. So how can we salvage it? Or is it worth salvaging? Or give it a bit of space, or he'd spend more time with her today. And then seek first to understand and then to be understood. Again, that's an important one. Helping them to just listen. You know, what do I need to understand about this friendship? How aware am I of this friend of mine? What is she like? You know, we both love hockey, or both love, I don't know, Harry Styles, or whatever it is we love. But outside of our likes, what do we need to focus on? You know, what is her temperament? What is her way of being like, etc.? And then synergize. Of course, it's that whole thing of turning a conflict into a possibility to grow something better. You know, and that's what's lovely to see with the girls. When there's forgiveness there, it changes. So anyway, I'm going to finish there. I've gone on a little bit longer than I intended to, so forgive me for that. I know Maria wants to open the floor to questions. So I'm only delighted to take questions for as long as people want, or whatever, however people want to take it. So maybe it's to ask, maybe, how do we do this, Maria? If people want to put up the hand, they can.
Well, I gave them the possibility of unmuting themselves if they have a question. So if you guys would like to unmute and ask, you can go ahead.
I can't see everybody at the same time, so because there's a lot of you, which is great. So I don't know if there's anybody there.
Anybody have any questions?
Mary Klein. Mary has a question there. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks. That was actually very informative and bringing me back to my own school days for some of it. It's probably showing my Luddite anti-technology kind of side of it, but I'm just concerned. Obviously, the only rearing I can give my daughter is the experiences I had myself as well, and remembering back to school and stuff. But nowadays the technology is a totally different kettle of fish, and the phones and stuff. So what we have is I'm very kind of listening and stuff, and you know, she's coming home every day saying, oh yeah, I've made this friend and this and I never knew so everything you've been saying, and I'm just there going, just be friendly with everyone. And the school she's come from, there's a number of them come together, but they're all splitting out and making new friends in different directions, but still being in touch, which is great. So I'm just telling her to keep an open mind and everything. But where I'm concerned is, I know, I don't think it's the policy of the school so much, but at the moment, because of COVID, the kids have to use a form of technology, either, I don't know if it's laptop or whatever, but the phone is what she's using to research stuff. And my only fear about that is, and maybe you can just give me a bit of advice to kind of give her advice there, is that if they're looking up stuff, that's fine. No issue. There's total logic to that and everything. But if I was a 12, 13-year-old girl and I took out my phone to look up something, you know, I'm thinking, I'll just check my WhatsApp or whatever. And then if they see a message and there's a bit of an issue with a friendship, and that can throw them for the whole day. So obviously the phone is necessary at the moment to get them through this COVID situation, and that could be there for the whole year. But how do you manage the rest of it, where something just quite simple can just throw them off balance, and then the lesson is lost, the day could be lost if it's not a good thing, or something, let's say it's a mean girl, or something was said or something. So what would you recommend in that situation? What do you say? I don't want to be the mum that's always kind of going, oh well, you shouldn't be on your phone, like, but I mean, obviously there has to be a quid pro quo, I guess.
Can I answer that one more for
the, off you go, perfect.
Sorry, yeah, what perfect. We're doing at school. So one of the things we recommended the girls to do in this specific case is it's the one thing we thought about when we allowed them to do this, was to turn off the notifications. So any phone can have their notifications turned off. That's one thing. Okay. The second thing is, we are encouraging the girls, because it's something that I'm going to be honest. I mean, you're walking. I do the walk around for lunch or for break, and I'm looking, and they try to have their phone. So,
And that's the thing, because they're, you know, friendships to be made are so important.
Yeah.
And that's back to my old. If you're sitting together and you're looking at your phones, you're not talking to
me. Actually, Mary, that's exactly why the policy was established last year. And it was something that the school did in partnership, parents, teachers, students. And the decision was to not have the phones at all during the school day, specifically for that reason you're mentioning. Now, because of the COVID situation, some girls only have a phone. Some girls have a tablet. Maybe they have a computer, a laptop. And we have encouraged some girls just have a phone. And what we're doing really is being very diligent and continuing to reinforce this. Please only use your phone when your teacher is asking you to take it out. So if the girls are following, only to use their phone when they're asked in class and they take their notifications off, then this could solve some of the issues in general. Now, in a perfect world, that would be exactly what everybody's doing. But as parents, that's what we should encourage the girls, and that's what as teachers we're doing at school.
And I'm kind of thinking ahead, because it hasn't been an issue, it hasn't raised its head for me at all in that kind, but I'm kind of there going, and then I see them even when they're hanging out together at home, separate to school, and they're on the phones, and I'm trying to go, okay, like I'd love to say, give them to me, talk to each other, you have to learn to talk to each other, and you can't do that though, so where do you stand on that?
I suppose the other two sisters for me to pop in there is that I suppose there's a couple of sort of basic rules that I know some parents have, and I think they're very helpful. Is at meal times, no phones for adults or for the family. No phones in bedrooms after a certain time. Phones in bedrooms. That's kind of basic, I suppose. And it's also things like negotiating with your team. Well, what's reasonable in terms of time? You know, and I think it's important, because you'd be surprised sometimes how they bring the time down that they'd want to be on their phone or their tech, and certainly not before they go to bed. Because
it's not so much at home. Yeah. I mean, it's more when they're together and you see a gang of them together, like heads in the phones. I'll use the old-fashioned primary school thing of a play date, but like we only got a phone this this January. But yeah, just like, do I ever interfere and go, look, I mean, now they are teenagers. Do you go, look, the two of you are sitting side by side, hanging out together, but nobody's talking. And that's what I don't get.
Well, I think you're still the parent or the adult. So I think it's good to have the conversations with their teens about these things, you know, and say, look, you know, encourage them, look, come on, when she's over, why don't we put the phones at the door? Whatever it is, you don't want to, you know, but I think there's a certain amount of there's certain basic rules that need to be there, and then there's a certain element of negotiating. I don't want to scare anybody about social media or phones, but there is a documentary, and I don't want to promote anything, but there is a documentary, I don't know, from a couple of friends of mine who watched it with their teens. It's called The Social Dilemma. I think some of you may have seen it. I know a couple of parents who were concerned about their older teens and their phones watched it together with their teens, and the teens literally took off notifications and removed certain apps from their phones after it. So, and it's given by the makers, you know, the brains behind the like and the brains behind all kinds of, various apps and things like that on phones. So that can be an interesting one. It's just about educating our teens on, do you want to spend your life on a phone, or do you want to actually spend your life in life and engaging in real time and FaceTime? And with all of, I think with teenagers, we always have to have that conversation frequently. But I feel your pain, Mary. And I think it's as we move into this world more and more, we're going to be discovering more and sort of supporting each other more and finding ways to navigate this territory. But anyway,
okay, thank you.
It's good to keep the conversation alive, very much so. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Is there anybody else who'd like to ask a question? Oh, Aoife, is that Aoife? Do you want to ask a question, Aoife? No, you're okay. You're waving at somebody in the distance. Okay.
Yeah, I don't have anybody else.
You don't have any more questions?
No. Okay. You guys, yeah.
Okay, very good. Oh, okay, Aoife's going to step in and ask a question. Okay, you'll have to unmute yourself there, I think, Aoife.
Just a quick one to say thank you so much for your time tonight, and thank you for all of the information. Some of it you forget as a parent. Mm.